Hi there, House Culture listener. If you enjoy this episode or have enjoyed listening to other episodes in our series, please support and donate to us through the Acast supporter feature. All donations will help us create the content that you love listening to. You can decide how much you give and there's no regular commitment. So it could be a one-off and every now and then or once every time you listen. It's up to you. Click on the supporter link that you can find in the episode or show description, and with Google or Apple Pay, it will take you less than 30 seconds to make your payment.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey guys, this is Sydney Charles, and you're listening to the House Culture Podcast.
House Culture.
Hello everybody, and welcome to another episode in this third season of the House Culture Podcast, hosted by me, the managing editor at House Culture, Matt Rouse. I hope that wherever you are listening right now, you are safe, comfortable, and looking forward to hitting the dance floor very soon. We're almost there, party people. The shackles of lockdown are coming off, and excitement is building for what I'm sure will be an unforgettable summer. Thanks for tuning in today, and if it's your first time here, welcome. We are House Culture, a collective of house music fans who have come together through their mutual love of the beat to celebrate the spirit of house music. Not only can you absorb our daily output of positive vibes on Instagram at houseculturenet, you can also dig into our hefty back catalogue of previous guests on the podcast. I'm talking about iconic DJ talents such as Fatboy Slim, Danny Tenaglia, David Morales, Harry Romero, Danny Rampling and Graham Park. But our conversations don't just stop there. As we are House Culture, we like to investigate every element of the scene. And that is why we have also spoken to people like Manumission founding member and Pikes Hotel creative director Dawn Hindle, the man who took Kiss FM from Pirate to PLC Gordon Mack, and the promoter behind the legendary Clockwork Orange brand, Danny Clockwork himself. Honestly, if you don't recognise the name on the guest list, give it a listen, as we make sure they all have a fascinating story to tell. Now, with that out of the way, are you ready for the next episode? In this one, we talk to a DJ and producer who brings such a unique blend of house music rhythms to all of his sets that it has been christened with its own name, the Sydney Sound. It is, of course, the man like Sydney Charles. In this conversation, you'll hear how Sydney developed a love of vinyl from a young age.
So I just had this one turntable and basically a normal stereo sound machine. And I always tried to mix those two together. And I just bought vinyls at the legendary Groove City vinyl shop in Hamburg when I was 15. Since then, I think I spent all my pocket money on vinyl. Whenever I had 12 euros together, I bought me a new piece of black gold.
How creating his own productions was the launch pad for his success.
I think producing music for me was the foundation of my whole career, to be able to express myself in making music in the studio. Producing for me was something that I could do every day, all day long.
What kind of sound he likes to bring to dance floors all over the world.
I like electronic music, but a lot of times I found it a bit too clean. And house music for me is always a bit dirty. I always try to keep that with the style that I'm producing, because I love to play out the style the most, is house music that sounds rough, but also energetic at the same time.
and you'll hear him reminisce about his favorite places to play on the infamous White Isle of Ibiza.
After my first set at DC10, people asked me how was it, and I was not really able to tell them how it was. When you as a DJ, you can really perform the tracks that really are your signature music and people understand it completely, then I think it's a very special experience for any DJ.
This one was recorded live and direct from his balcony in Berlin. So I hope you enjoy it. This is Sydney Charles.
House Culture.
Hi, Sydney. We really appreciate you sitting down with us on the House Culture podcast today. You're a DJ and producer who has broken through with their own unique take on the house music sound. You've played all over the world and released on iconic labels within the scene. However, we always want to start at the beginning and understand how you got to where you are today. Can you tell us about first discovering music when you were growing up and where that was?
Oh, wow. Well, I was quite fortunate because my mother used to be a music journalist. So she basically got sent a lot of new releases before they come out on the radio. And then she had to write critics on them. So we had a huge vinyl collection at home. And also my mother got invited to quite a lot of festivals. So a few times I came with her, and I was, I don't know, maybe 12 years old. And there were also a lot of other kids, and with like camping and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, I think this was like the first time where I consciously listened to music and really liked it. I was not really aware of what style of music that was, but I just remember that like really loud music and rhythms definitely already catched me back then.
And was there any specific genre that your mother was critiquing, or was it just all music that she was a music journalist for?
It was all kinds of, but it was more mainstream commercialized music. Mm-hmm. So we had a lot of like German artists in the collection, but also artists like Prince. She also did a personal interview with them while she was pregnant with me. It's quite a fascinating thing about that. Yeah. She did quite a lot of critics on all kinds of genres, but mainly mainstream radio music.
Mm-hmm. And when you were visiting these festivals at a young age as well, was it just like a fun time, like you said, camping with other kids of similar ages, or was it something that maybe not necessarily at the time, but looking back, did you, you know, have an affinity with people being on stage and performing and enjoying that sense?
Ah, yeah, definitely. I think to be in this world that early, gave me the impression that this is something very unique and also very kind of familiar, because when I was there, we were always going with a lot of friends, and we were all enjoying this experience together. And this is definitely something that still, this feeling is still with me when I'm approaching music or festivals nowadays. For me, it's like an experience that you experience with your family all together or with a lot of friends. And it's definitely something that sticks with me till today.
You came from you entered the DJ world as a teenager into more hip hop and soul and R&B and funk, is that right?
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, so what was the journey there? Obviously, you know, a teenager, were you buying records specifically to become a DJ? Did you have like, you know, how did hip hop as a sound kind of influence you at that stage?
Yeah, I grew up in Hamburg, north of Germany, and back in the days in the mid 90s, well, to I think 2005 more or less, Hamburg was the hip hop capital of Germany. Mm-hmm. So not only the most famous German hip hop artists were coming from Hamburg, but also a lot of international hip hop artists came to Hamburg to perform. So the scene there was quite dense, and I was always following hip-hop since I was a teenager because I also played basketball, and basketball is very strongly connected to hip-hop. And I don't know whether you know these And One mixtapes, these like streetball mixtapes with DJs performing and like mixing basically DJ sets on top of those videos. And so through sports, I was more connected to hip hop. This was kind of the start, I think, where basketball got me into hip hop music. And then I was more interested in DJing because I saw a lot of series like Mixery Raw Deluxe. This was a TV series on Viva, which was like the German antidote to MTV. And they were always these DJ battles where DJs were kind of in the turntablism style, beat juggling and scratching to compete against each other. And I always record those series. And there was also a radio channel, Jam FM, where you could send in your own mixtapes to compete against other DJs. And yeah, I think from this perspective, I more and more got interested in street culture, hip hop. Basketball was also very strongly connected to the street culture. So when all this stuff came together, I more and more wanted to become a DJ myself. So one of my mother's friends, DJ Zack, he used to be a DJ on Ibiza for a very long time in Salinas, more this kind of Balearic sound. And he gave me my first turntable when I was 15. So I just had this one turntable and basically a normal stereo sound machine. Yeah. And I always tried to kind of mix those two together. And I just bought vinyls at the legendary Groove City vinyl shop in Hamburg. And yeah, since then, I think I spent all my pocket money on vinyl. Whenever I had 12 euros together, I bought me a new piece of black gold.
Black gold, brilliant. And so that entry into DJing, starting off from a hip-hop sense, obviously you said that you were inspired by seeing all of the beat juggling and all of that kind of more performance-based DJing that can come out of hip-hop, scratching and whatever. How did that influence you? You know, how did you first make that jump from hip-hop to house music, and how did that style influence you as a DJ?
Well, I think I'm always fascinated by the roots of something. So where does a certain sound come from? How became hip-hop what it is, and how became also house what it is? And when I was looking a lot of documentaries on YouTube, I always found this connection between hip hop and house, especially through breakdancing, because the breakdance style needed to have like kind of fast beats, like more or less 120 BPM or higher. And yet, well, original hip hop sound was not that fast. So the hip house movement kind of developed out of this breakdance scene. And so the connection from hip hop to house is very, very close. I think it's just when all the disco influences came towards that and mixed up, I think the hip house part of house became a bit like overrun by the disco sound. But for me personally, I always felt that the grooves and the energy and also these rough beats, they were very much connected to how hip-hop sounded in the 90s as well. So for me, this connection was always there. And there were quite a lot of house DJs back in the days in Hamburg as well. When you think of Moose T, for example, is I think the most famous German house producer. Who is a legend, I think. And he was, for me personally, one of those artists where I really got into house music, where I experienced house music as well the first time properly. Also because I knew that Moose T was from Hamburg, and I also was interested in who in Hamburg, in my hometown, is actually interested in this style, because it was still quite rare back in the days when I was a teenager to listen to this kind of style. And because mostly the sound in Germany, which was common, is just techno, really rough, hard techno style. And yeah, so I think to come back to your question, I think this part of hip hop, the street culture, which connected to breakdancing, got me interested into the faster beats. And then I was trying to look up who actually is also performing house or hip house in my hometown. And then I always came back to Moose Tea. And yeah, this is kind of my jump into probably the first experience with the house sound.
Was it a scary proposition? Obviously, you've been buying vinyl as a teenager, all in one specific almost genre in terms of hip hop and whatever. And then you were transitioning into house as well. Was it a natural progression, or was it a scary leap to be like, okay, well, this is going to be my sound now?
Actually, it was not scary at all, because during that time, I was already a hip hop DJ for, I think, 4 years. Mm-hmm. And I was able to get into the scene, and I played quite a lot of gigs also all over Germany. And for me personally, after a time, I found myself in a position as a hip hop DJ that I was always playing the same tracks all and all over again, because this is what the people are requesting most of the time. You always have then these new kind of styles that you can mix in, but in every gig, the crowd kind of wants the same music. And this for me was kind of weird after 4 years to know that the 80% of my set is just stays the same. And I think it was quite boring then. I was quite bored of DJ gigs, and I also had the feeling that the vibes inside the nightclubs where I performed were a bit aggressive. There was always a bit of aggressiveness, and it was more about get to know women rather and getting drunk rather than enjoying the music. And I was also quite a lot of times I didn't receive my money as a DJ because people were just not paying me out. And I just had the feeling that the scene, the hip hop scene, was kind of not dying out, but it became more and more boring and also commercial. It was then a lot of producers collaborated with, I don't know, Britney Spears, Pussycat Dolls, and all that stuff, where I was not really connected with hip hop wise. I always felt I was more connected to the old sound, the old school sound, the conscious rap kind of sound. And so I think it was not difficult to change to house. It was more a decision, because I was not happy anymore how the scene, the hip hop scene was. In Germany, or in Hamburg especially.
Yeah. And you know, you mentioned Moose Tea there as well. When you made that transition, were there any other artists or DJs that you're particularly looking towards, that you liked their sound, and what were your experiences visiting clubs, enjoying house music at that stage as well?
Well, it's, as I said, the house or the electronic music scene was relatively small. We didn't have a lot of big artists, but we had a lot of like small parties and with local DJs. And there were sometimes performing artists like Kerry Chandler or Derek May, who played at a club called Balsal, which was like a really small kind of underground cellar club for 300 capacity. And I think this was really, really cool to see those kind of artists play in those venues, which are super intimate, and is a different experience to enjoying music like this than in really huge clubs or huge festivals. And maybe this was something I really appreciated about the house scene in in Hamburg is because it was so small that the experience when you had a big artist performing was still very, very intimate. And well, you could basically like shake his hand while he was playing. And for me back then, it was something very, very like far away normally to think about big artists performing in Hamburg and be able to kind of connect with them on the dance floor. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think the two venues, or not, let's say three venues in Hamburg that really had good artists and where you could really enjoy house music was Golden Poodle, mm-hmm. Ballsaal, and Ego Club, mm-hmm. Which is the club which used to be the club from Solomon.
Okay.
But this one opened relatively late in, I think 9 years ago, mm-hmm. it opened. And I think 2 years ago it was closed and the new guy bought it off. But I think these three venues were where I regularly went to listen to good house music artists, mm-hmm. like back in the days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you mentioned you were already getting gigs as a hip hop DJ, and you know, in Hamburg as well, you transitioned over to that house music sound. Was it an immediate success in terms of, okay, they knew that you were a DJ, like club owners knew that you were a DJ on the scene, but maybe you played hip hop. Was it easy then to start getting gigs playing a different sound, or was it, did you have to start over again?
Yeah, not at all. It was not easy. So these two scenes are not connected. Mm-hmm. They are not connected in any way. So it's not giving you any advantage to be a hip hop DJ and then starting into the house. Maybe it gives you an advantage of the DJ skills that you learn, because when you start playing only vinyl records, of records which are maximum 3 to 4 minutes long, you are much more probably adapted to the stress of finding a new track than rather when you play a house track, which is, I don't know, 7-8 minutes, mm-hmm. and you have quite a lot of time to dig the next tune. Mm-hmm. I think what kind of was my first step into the house scene was a birthday party at a very new renovated bar in the Sternschanze district in Hamburg, which is kind of the maybe people know it when you say it's the Kreuzberg of Hamburg. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of an alternate area where a lot of bars and clubs are opening and where young people go out. And it's a bar, it was a bar called Hoch 3, which means high 3. It had like 3 levels on top of each other. Mm-hmm. And I performed at this birthday, and the club was still not open, the bar was still not open, but the owner was there and he listened to my music and he asked me whether I want to maybe play regularly at his bar, like every Wednesday. So I became a resident in this bar, and from there on I had a lot of practice mixing house music, and there's a lot of friends who came and I had a really good time there. But still, it was a very local affair. So this DJing in this bar was not getting me anywhere national or international. So I always wanted to find out, is it actually possible to maybe even like live from being a DJ or being a producer? Mm-hmm. And this was the next step when I found out that actually, in case you want to maybe be so lucky and earn money from your art, you definitely should also try to make music yourself, mm-hmm. from the scratch. And then I started to actually be more familiar with making music on my own.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that is the difference between existing as a DJ and succeeding as a DJ, in terms of having that basis of you are producing your own things as well? Do you feel that is the thing that kicks you on to the next level? I mean, you said that in Hamburg it felt very local. Do you think starting to produce stuff is mm-hmm. what really elevated you?
Yes, I would even go more far and say without producing, I wouldn't be able to perform internationally at all. I think producing music for me was the foundation of my whole career, to be able to express myself in making music in the studio was something also that got the whole thing even more interesting for me. So I was actually more happy in the studio than DJing. It's a funny thing, which I found out later, that producing for me was something that I could do every day, all day long. And so for me, it really became it became something more serious when I started producing music, as it was just something I did for myself and not for, I don't know, competing with other people out there. And from there on, I think, it was kind of the real start of what made me an artist today, was making music as a producer.
Yeah, yeah. And what do you feel was that moment for you that felt like a turning point, in terms of, was it getting a big gig, or was it getting your track into the hands of someone who then played it and you heard it and it blew up? What was a big break for you, do you think?
I think it was, I think the big break where I really thought, okay, now I'm on the radar of a lot of people, was when a manager called me from two quite famous electronic music artists from, I think, back in the days. He was handling Panpot and the whole Mobile crew, like Anja Schneider. And I think back in the days, Panpot was also part of Mobile. And this guy called me and said, hey, I realized I have this number from your friend, and I heard your tracks quite a lot in the past. And what do you think about meeting up and talking about music? And I was like, okay, whoa, I actually, there are people that are in the scene, working professionally in the business, they're interested in the music that I'm making. Mm-hmm. And this was like a turning point inside my head, where I realized, okay, from now on, I could actually give even more into it and making it something which I can live off. So this is something that it's not only a side thing where I don't know, which I really enjoy, but I could also like give even 100%, and then it could get into something more serious. Mm-hmm. And before that, I think this was always like small doors opening after each other when I produced a track, and as you said, one of bigger DJs got it into his hands, played it out, and someone sent me a video, and this always keeps motivating you, but mm-hmm. it's still not a turning point where you could say that now you got somewhere, mm-hmm. you know? So all these small things, they are huge motivations, but in the end, I think what really turned my head 180 degrees was the call from this manager, who really was interested in me and handling my situation.
And I mean, there is a very specific Sydney Charles sound that you play in your DJ sets and in your productions as well. I mean, how would you mm-hmm. describe that as a point of difference to how other DJs play? How would you describe your own sound?
Yeah, I think the sound that I really stick to was a sound that also came from my hip hop, funk, and soul influences. So I like electronic music, but a lot of times I found it a bit too clean, especially mm-hmm. when you think of about this minimal techno hype from beginning of 2000s. And a lot of the tracks that I was listening to was not 100% what I felt house music was really like. And house music for me is always a bit dirty. It's not 100% well mixed. It's always a bit rough. It sounds very full. And it sound, even like digital tracks sound like they are recorded from a vinyl or something. So I always try to keep that with the style that I'm producing, that I'm making also, because I love to play out the style the most, is house music that sounds rough but also energetic at the same time. And I think this is basically the style that I'm doing already since day one.
You know, my next question was going to be, how do you think your style has evolved over the years? But, you know, just from what you've just said, it feels, you know, it's just a natural, more modern sounding progression of what your original style has always been. Is that how you feel about it?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Of course, there were always some adaptions or some experiments that I did. I also did some a bit more like techno-ish kind of sound when I had some releases on Drum Code or True Soul, but I still don't like to lose my red line, if that makes sense. So mm-hmm. I always want to know that people know that this song is for me, and that it's something coming from me. And if I turn my style around 180 degrees, then I don't know. I think it felt weird if someone knows something from me and then he is this totally different music I'm making. I don't know. I just feel it's not really, really authentic, mm-hmm. because it kind of means that you, I don't know. It doesn't mean that, but for me, it always had the impression that it would mean that I adapt to what people want to hear, mm-hmm. and not what I really want to do. And maybe there are some people that say, oh, I'm sick of house music, I make techno. But then, I don't know, it doesn't feel like you were 100% into house music at all before. Mm-hmm. So I always like to have this part of me, which is my core. And from there, this music, it's changing, but it's changing in small measures. Like I did a bit like house influenced techno, and now I'm a bit more nowadays minimalistic, deep house sound. But I still have my grooves, my energy and my vibe. And I think this is something people realize also.
Yeah, and it's good to hear you talking kind of broadly about grooves and things like that. I think it can quickly get quite suffocating if you're looking at just specific genres. You know, I'm just going to be like deep house or tech house or whatever. It can be quite limiting in that sense.
Exactly, 100%.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Cool. I mean, a few years back, you produced a back-to-back essential mix with Sante. Obviously, the essential mix, from the UK sense as well, you know, is a pretty big deal. I mean, how did that feel at the time, getting that call? And was it kind of scary putting that set together? And how did you approach it?
Yeah, this was a very good moment, for sure. So I remember during that time I was in Ibiza, and we had a residency at Vista Club, which is the small room of privilege. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know whether you know, it's like a surrounded by glass.
Yeah.
And it's a very nice location. I think a lot of people, they don't even know it when they come to Ibiza. And we used to perform there every Sunday, Santé, Darius Rustian, and I. And I think this time was probably the peak of our career, in a sense of the sound that we were making, kind of tech housey, jack and house sound. And when we got this call from the Essential Mix, we were like, wow, okay, now it's getting really serious, and we are reaching a different level. Mm-hmm. And when we put the tracks together, Santé and I, we were sitting in our house in Ibiza, and we were really thinking about putting a mix together which also includes tracks that we made extra for the Essential Mix. Mm-hmm. So we didn't want to just showcase our own music and showcase stuff that we bring out on our label. We also make it even more special and bring in stuff that you never heard before in any of our sets or in any of our podcasts or something. So yeah, because Essential Mix is such a big thing and it's such a special occasion to do a mix for them, we also did a lot of effort to make it special.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's a fantastic listen, and like you say, there is some special things in there as well that you'd created specifically for that. It's always good to listen to that and understand that the DJ or the artist understands what they're getting into and has made that extra effort to make it special.
Exactly.
In terms of producing your own material, you produce, you DJ, and you collaborate as well. How important is it to do all of those things across the spectrum, to be completely like having all of those tools in your armory? How important is it for you as an artist to be able to do all of those things?
I think it's really important. I mean, nowadays, a DJ is not only a DJ anymore. You really have to have a lot of skills to be able to stay in the scene for quite a long time and also be successful in what you're doing. You really need to have, you need to have knowledge about a lot of things. And it's even more important nowadays in this pandemic. Because you can really see the difference between real producers and DJs who are only DJs. I mean, I think a lot of them are struggling nowadays, because also probably you can have a kind of a second leg and teaching skills. You can make sample packs. You have all this knowledge to teach also people who are interested in what you're doing, a way of making music, or your way of making music. So I think, it's something that definitely separates, I don't know how to call it in English, but it separates the core from the wolves from the sheep, I think.
the men from the boys, I think, is sometimes what's said.
Something like that.
Yeah, the real true enthusiasts. Yeah, and the people who are just participating, I suppose. I mean, when, you know, obviously you mentioned the pandemic and we're living through that right now. How has your creativity been during this period? We've spoken to, so far this season, we spoke to Anya Schneider and Alan Fitzpatrick, mm-hmm. as well. And they made some interesting points about how difficult it's been when they're producing material that's being released during this period, that they can't mm-hmm. judge how good it is really, because a lot of their judgment previously has been based on the reaction of a dance floor. Have you found it difficult to be able to be inspired in that way during this lockdown, or has it given you new opportunities to pursue different aspects of your musical journey?
I think in the beginning it was much more easy to make music, because you were not, or as an artist performing every weekend, you were always with the head already in the future, thinking about the next gigs. And so this pressure kind of got away, because there were no gigs anymore. And so the studio time was feeling more free. So I was just making music without thinking about the next weekend, without thinking about the next tour or festival or whatsoever. So I had more time to experiment, to try out new hardware or something like that, or a new way of making music in general. I was also looking a lot of tutorials. I became a member of another tutorial channel where I was looking on different approaches on creating grooves or melodies, just to stay awake and to stay interested, mm-hmm. and to learn new things. And I think this is something really important in this pandemic, that I realized that you always have to keep learning, and even if you think you are someone, or you are you reached a certain point where you shouldn't be learning new things, I think this is a really a false view on reality. And I think this was in the first lockdown was my main inspiration was just to learn new things and to try to involve them into my creative process. Mm-hmm. I think it became more and more difficult with the second lockdown, because the inspiration was not that big anymore. So when you always see the same things, you're at home, you have the same kind of daily rhythm, and sooner or later you just a bit empty inspiration wise. So I was struggling a bit creating music, or just creating ideas, or finishing off tracks. And this is something I realized definitely, that this whole touring, traveling, also that it gives you something back. It gives you energy, it gives you inspiration in a general sense. Yeah,
I mean, you're in Berlin right now, and doing my research for this piece, I read an interview with you, and I think you were living in Portugal at the time, and another one where you're living in Ibiza. It feels like you've lived in many different places. How important is location to you, and how inspiring is that when you are living in a different place? Does that influence what you're creating, or is it just a sense of, no, my studio is my studio in any place in the world?
No, I think definitely the location influences you in your creative process. I think everything can influence you, like experiences, a book, I don't know, a person. I think everything can influence your creative process in a positive or also in a negative way. Mm-hmm. Location-wise, when I moved to Berlin from Hamburg in, I think, 2012. Yeah, 2012. I think this was also a big change for my music, and also a big part of becoming professional. I think if I wouldn't have done this move from Hamburg to Berlin, which is not far, it's 1.5 hours mm-hmm. by train, but it's still a totally different world, and the scene here is so more complex and full that it changed my view on electronic music in many different ways. And it's the same with any place where you go. Also, when I moved to Ibiza, mm-hmm. Of course, it's an island that never sleeps. It's always with huge artists performing. So it also influences you in a very good way. But I think the only in Ibiza, you always have to be careful to not lose yourself in this kind of stream of people enjoying music, because at some point you just forget about actually creating music, and you just you're just there, and you don't really get creative anymore. You just enjoy the sun, you enjoy the parties, and then at some point you find yourself in a position without any new music in the end of the year or something. And with Portugal, I'd say actually I still live there, so I'm just here in Berlin because my family is here. But yeah, to come back to your question, I think every location, every city, every country gives you something to be inspired to create a different style or to create a new idea in the studio.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, you mentioned Ibiza there. You mentioned before about playing in a privilege as well in having that residency there. Obviously, you've played all over the island. What's it like working on the island and living there at the same time? Obviously, you said creativity can suffer as well. I mean, is there a temptation to? I mean, the island is not just all about clubbing as well. There are some beautiful places, especially in the north of the country, that you can visit as well and completely take a different approach. Did you participate in a lot of that when you were living out there? And what do you think is so special about the island?
Yeah, for sure. I think I know the island by heart now. I was driving along the coasts probably every other week, and trying to find a new secret beach that other people didn't find yet, which was probably impossible. But there are some beaches that are still very, very remote. And this was something that kept me busy on the island, just to explore the island in general. And I still think that this island has something very, very unique and special. And it's I don't agree with people saying that it lost its magic. I heard that a lot of times over the past years, but I definitely don't agree. Simply because also I know a lot of people who live there, and I know people behind the scenes who promote, and I think most of those people that I know, they work with a lot of passion, with all their heart, to create really good events. And I've also experienced so many good nights there that I would definitely recommend any one of my friends who've never been there to go. Because I still have some friends who've never been, and it's I always have to convince them to do it for the first time.
Yeah. And that first time is never a last time ever.
That's true.
What is your favorite place to play on the island? Or do you think each specific venue delivers a different vibe that you enjoy?
I think number one is still DC10. Simply because I think as a DJ, it's one of those places where you're just speechless after your set. Like after my first set at DC10, I was just people asked me how was it, and I was not really able to tell them how it was. I don't know. It was just like it's just when you as a DJ, you can really perform the tracks that really stands for you, that really kind of are your signature music, and people understand it completely, then I think it's a very special experience for any DJ. Yeah, I think it's still my number one. There are a lot of different places, of course, as you say, which have different vibes. I have very good memories from Sankey's, where I used to play super cool nights with Tribal Sessions, Darius Rossian, and we had so many good nights there. But I mean, it's a totally different vibe. It's like a dark kind of basement vibe, and it's a different experience, you know. So
cool. And I mean, when you're playing gigs as well, like, where do you stand on the tech that you use? Do you still enjoy playing off of vinyl? Do you have a digital element to it, or is it all digital? Where do you stand on what you do when you're behind the decks?
So I play mainly digital, but I always have some vinyl with me, and I always have a turntable standing there. And it's probably like an 80-20 relation from digital to vinyl, where I always like to play some records. And it's something that I also really miss if I don't do it, because it gives you that excitement mistakes can happen more easily if you play vinyl, and it still gives you something, a bit of spice into your set. When I only play digital, I feel it's also safe and secure, It sometimes can get a bit boring, I think.
Yeah, there's nothing better than nailing a mix with vinyl, like having a bit of finesse on, you know, a spinning disc rather than, you know, just poking at a poking at a CDJ. It can be a lot more satisfying.
Exactly.
I want to talk about your latest release, the Organica EP on Piv Records. It has a real kind of summery vibe to it, I thought. I mean, are you looking forward to getting back out there, hopefully in the summer, and playing gigs?
Yeah, I do. I mean, this EP got produced in the second lockdown. Mm-hmm. So, in the second lockdown, and it was, I think, mid-June or beginning of July. So it was... I was very much influenced by the weather during that time. And while I produced the track, I was just imagining open airs, festivals, and I wanted to create an EP which adapts to this vibe or creates this vibe in this scene.
Yeah. And are you working on anything right now that you're really excited about to get out there when, you know, hopefully things return, when people can return to dance floors?
Yes, and I think I signed an EP from one of my favorite artists to my label, Heavy House Society, and I did a remix myself for that EP, and it will be released in June. Mm-hmm. So I think in June, hopefully, as the Prime Minister of United Kingdom already mentioned, we have some festivals and clubs opening again. Mm-hmm. So I think this EP will open the doors again to the festival season, and also, yeah, hopefully people will like to play it out during that time.
Yeah, I mean, how do you think the scene might have changed a bit after this pandemic has run through its course and everyone's vaccinated and we're in a bit more control of it? Do you think there's obviously during lockdown there's been a lot of live streaming and DJs kind of interacting with their audiences in different and unique ways from different parts of the world? Mm-hmm. Do you think that is a new format within the scene, or do you think it's been it just had to happen during this period because no one could go out?
It's really hard to say, because I think that all the streaming will never replace a real party. It's just impossible. I mean, you have to be on the dance floor and enjoying music, because this house music, electronic music, is something that you always feel as well on your body from the frequencies that come out of these huge sound systems. So it's never enough to just watch music on a screen, you know. So it just takes the place now. So people are not like dying of lack of enjoying music and mm-hmm. culture. Yeah. And I think it's just simply impossible for me personally to think about real events or might be replaced with digital resources or something like that.
Yeah, so I mean, did during this period, did you get involved with any streams or anything in that sense, or was it something, like you say, that didn't feel natural and you know you'd rather keep it at arm's length?
No, I did. I did a couple of streams, and it was fun. It was cool to do it, but it's not really something that I would plan on myself to be something regular in my career or something. Mm-hmm. I just didn't feel that also the feedback of people were that. I don't know, that excited about the streams. It was always something that people enjoy, but it's never something that people are 100% happy about, you know, and compared to a proper event. So I did a couple of streams, but for me, yeah, it was just something that I did to get over this period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think hopefully that's... it's just been something that's just happened because of this period, and you know, like you say, I don't think it's going to replace that feeling of the community that you get from being on a dance floor in a club and, like you say, feeling the music rather than actually hearing it as well. I think that's a major difference.
Yes, I agree 100%.
So, I mean, what's your diary looking like then for the second half of this year? Have you managed to like get a load of bookings and tours and things like that booked in? Or are you being a bit more trepidatious in terms of like approaching it cautiously and, you know, just in case things go backwards rather than forwards?
No, I actually, if there are requests, I would not hesitate to take them on. I'm really looking forward to play again. I just came back from Ecuador. There was a club opened, and I just flew over just to play at this one venue. And so I'm really starving to play music, to be honest. And yeah, there are some requests in the UK. There are some requests from Italy. There are some requests in the United States. So yeah. But yeah, I would definitely not hesitate to take on some gigs. Definitely not.
Cool. Well, no, look forward to hopefully catching you somewhere later on this year. I mean, we are House Culture, and you are part of the culture of the scene with your producing and your DJing and your talent. What has the scene itself, the culture of the scene, brought to you, not just within your career, but what has it brought you to your life?
I think you already mentioned that in the last question. I think it's just a general sense of community and family, and to work with people that you see as family or that you like to work with is something that house culture definitely gave me or teach me as a life lesson. That the way how I approach people or how I want to work with people is always in a friendly manner, in a sense of community, and to create something together, to give something back to the scene. And yeah, I think this is something house culture stands for me, for diversity, for tolerance. And this is something I also carry with me as a personality, how I treat people in general. And this is something house music and house culture carries it with it. It's the identity of house music. So this is something I definitely took on.
Brilliant. I think that's a most excellent point to finish on. That's great.
Cool. Okay, mate. Have a good one.
Cheers, man. You too.
Bye.
House culture.
What an interesting journey Sydney has had, right? Moving through the hip-hop scene and then bringing that experience to the world of house music. No wonder his sound is such a unique one. I hope you enjoyed listening to that chat. Also, keep your eyes out for that release he mentioned coming out in June on his own Heavy House Society label. You know it's going to be a good one if the man himself has delivered his own remix. Whilst we're talking about new beats to discover, the regular listeners amongst you might have noticed that we didn't get a chance to discuss Sydney's 5 track choices for our ever-growing House Culture Perfect playlist that you can find on Spotify. This epically eclectic selection of tunes has taken submissions from every single one of our previous podcast guests, and Sydney did not want to miss out. So, for his Catalyst, a track that originally got him into house music, you heard him mention it in our chat. It's Hamburg's own Moose T with Horny, his huge jam from 1998. Sydney's floor filler choice is Noi Doi with Deeper Underground, a track that contains a cheeky Jamiroquai sample. That's probably the reason why it's not on Spotify. Although other music sources are available, you know where to look. Happy hunting on that one. For some pure shoreside vibes, Sydney has chosen the beautiful Calypso by Vince Watson for his Sunsetter tune. A tearjerker track that always fills Mr. Charles with emotion is the deep and meaningful Daily Prayer by Mr. G. And finally, to finish things off, the crowd are asking for one more. What does he play as his last tune? It is, of course, the Kerry Chandler mix of You're In My System by The System, who are, of course, Kerry Chandler and Jerome Sydenham. Now, that particular mix is also not on Spotify, but I have dropped in the recent Dennis Quinn remix that is similar. obviously not as good as the original, you should really seek that one out. So if you want to immerse yourself in all of those stellar choices, plus a few others from our House Culture podcast family, search on Spotify for House Culture Perfect Playlist, stick it on shuffle and turn it up loud. With that as your soundtrack, please help support this podcast by loving, liking, tweeting, sharing and rating or reviewing us on Apple. We've had some fantastic feedback already, so if you say something good, it will not only help us to continue to create these episodes that you love listening to, it could also get you a shout out on a future one as well. This time around, I've got to do it. The shout out is going to the one and only Joy Butler, mother of DJ, producer and previous podcast guest Josh Butler, whose CDs it was that originally got her son into the sound of repetitive beats and set him on his way to global stardom. Joy, thanks for tuning in and for all of your positive comments. If you keep them coming, we'll keep delivering new and exciting episodes just for you. And if you want to join us at House Culture from wherever you might be in the world right now, please hit up our Instagram feed at HouseCultureNet or follow the hashtag TrueHouseCulture. Not only will you be kept fully informed about the podcast, you'll also get connected with other beat lovers from across the globe. And finally, if you want to get in touch with me, Matt Rouse, you can do it directly on Instagram at DJ Matt Rouse. Thanks for listening, stay safe, and see you next time.
House Culture.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.